What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with my favorite conversations every single week. We get to talk to short-term rental investors willing to share the ups, the downs, the good, the bad, and everything in between in their short-term rental investing journey. Today, we've got Mr. Chuck Law from Las Vegas, Nevada joining us. Chuck, appreciate you joining me, my friend.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We were just talking about how hot it is down in Vegas right now. So you're like, you decided we'll get into the whole investment, but your property is all the way across the country and a little bit cooler temperatures, but you're kind of disappointed because you can't get in it. It's too booked.
Yeah, exactly. We usually go there for the summer up in upstate New York, near Buffalo. And yeah, it's crazy. I didn't think for a second that it would be booked in summer because it's a ski property.
Yeah.
So yeah. July, August is totally booked.
Yeah, well, everybody wants to escape the heat. So before we dive into the property itself, why don't you tell everybody a little bit of your backstory? I love starting there. I love starting with, you know, what pays the bills? What do you do for a living? Where did you, like what is your real estate investing experience in the past? And what kind of led you into short-term rentals? And then we'll dive into that journey.
So I started out, I'm a little bit older. I'm 60. So right now I'm retired. But I started out as a bellman at Bellagio. And then I moved into my own business. I started a ATV, UTV rental business. So we rent great Polaris Razors out in the desert. And then I think I started that in 2013. I sold it after COVID, maybe 2022 or so, 2021. And now I'm retired. And at that point, right before I retired, that's when I started the Airbnb business. I only have one, but so far it's been doing great.
Love it. Love it. While you were doing, I know as a business owner, sometimes you don't have a ton of extra time to do anything other than run that business. But did you do any dabbling in any other real estate investing in the past?
I've had apartment buildings that I've rented out to people, you know, nothing major, duplexes, fourplexes, nothing too great. And I never kept them. Yeah. But yeah, that was a pain because you had to deal with renters, you had to deal with problems and fixing things and, you know, all that stuff. And I just found that the Airbnb side of it, a lot of people say that they have problems with their, you know, Airbnb people. I've never had a problem. Yeah. So it's been great so far.
Love it. Nice. You, were you born and raised in Vegas? You said Bellagio. When you started off with the working career, or did you move there from somewhere?
I moved there from Buffalo, New York. Actually Arcade, New York, which is really close to Buffalo.
Yeah.
So, that was in my mid-20s or so.
So when I lead into my next question of how did we decide where we wanted to invest, that probably tells us the reason why we wanted to go back.
Exactly.
You know, that kind of back home, right?
Right. So when I was a kid, it was a ski resort about maybe 15, 20 miles away from my house. And we used to ski there all the time. Always wanted to own a property there for some reason. And I did that.
I was just talking to somebody this morning about another kind of a in the industry, coach, guru, I don't know. They don't really have a coaching program, but they do. They're definitely in the industry helping people invest in properties more on the turnkey side. And he was talking to me about like they really steer clear of like we call them lifestyle assets. And I always tell people, you know, if you're going to do this, why not buy properties in areas that you want to use and that you'd love to own? And he was like, why do you guys do that? Like, why not just go for the best investments? And so I've always, we've kind of always been one of those people on the back end of this that says, let's have our cake and eat it too a little bit, right? If we can. And,
right.
And you've been around our group for a long enough time that, you know, you've heard me talk about start with areas that you love to, visit, that you'd love to own. What would you say if you had somebody like, is that conversation, if you were part of that conversation this morning I was having? And, you know, you did invest in an area that you own and didn't just chase the money, if you will. And because I always say you can still make really good investments in areas that you love to own.
Absolutely.
How would it have made any difference on the enjoyment of the process if it was just a means to an end versus an area that you were familiar with and that you've always wished you would own a property?
Absolutely. I mean, when I go back and visit, it's just something special. I get to see my friends. I get to enjoy the property while I'm there. And I don't know. I wouldn't do it any other way. I mean, if you go to a place where you don't know, just because you're chasing some sort of investment, chasing the money, I mean, a lot of things can go wrong, in my opinion. So,
yeah, that's why I tried to tell him. I said, you know, one of the things, there's kind of intangible benefits that you can't put on a spreadsheet. You can't put on a pro forma. And like you said, I get to go use it. I get to see my friends. It's an area that I grew as a kid. I've always was like, man, it'd be fun to own here. Those are not things that show up on a pro forma and on a underwriting spreadsheet, but they're real. And they're, you know, they're really tangible to those of us who do invest in lifestyle assets. And so I love that that's where you went back, you know, back home, if you will, to an area that you loved as a kid. So we select the area. We start underwriting properties. It was, talk to me about the underwriting process in that acquisition phase.
I don't remember who I used. I think it was North Point. Uh-huh. What was his name over at North Point? I can't
remember. Jeff Chisholm's team at North Point.
Jeff Chisholm. Yeah. So I used Jeff Chisholm at the beginning. And then right in the middle of the process to get the loan, he moved to another bank.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, you know. So that process kind of threw a monkey wrench into everything for a little bit. But I finally did close with North Point without Jeff Chisholm. And I guess he went back afterwards, maybe a year or two later. I don't remember. But anyways, the process was pretty straightforward with North Point Bank. And if you have any other questions, I don't even know.
Was it a second home loan? Did you run down with the financing? Yes. Was it like a 10% down second home loan?
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly how I did it.
Yeah, awesome. And so and back then when you bought, the rates weren't skyrocketing yet, right? They were still very, very favorable for us as investors, right?
I think I got 7.5%.
Okay.
No, wait. No, actually, I think I was in the 5.5.
Yeah, I was going to say back then, because that's about where rates are at now on some of those loans. But when did you buy? When was the acquisition?
It was like 3 years ago. 4 years ago,
early 2022 ish.
Yeah. It was about 5.5, 5.75 somewhere.
Yeah, that's about right. And then they, by the end of 2022, they really had started to spike up into that closer to that 7 range. And so, you got in right before they went up significantly. Did you buy an existing short term rental, or did you have to set it up from scratch?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't, the guy, I guess, dabbled in it, so it wasn't existing really. But yeah, I purchased it. It was kind of like one house with two apartments in it.
Yeah.
So basically you go in through the front door, the bottom, there's a front door upstairs and there's a front door at the bottom. You go through the bottom and there's two doors. But one goes upstairs to a 3-bedroom, 2-bath unit and downstairs to a 2-bedroom, 1-bath unit. But combined is 5 bedrooms, 3-bath. And the way I use it is I use it only as one house.
Yeah.
Because I figured I did a little experimenting between, you know, renting just the top and renting the bottom or renting both. And it was just too much noise, too much, you know, confusion going on. So I just do right now, 5-bedroom, 3-bath. Yep. And it's great because families can bring their grandma and the grandma can go downstairs and have her own little apartment and then come back upstairs and join the family in the bigger area. So it's working out pretty nice for us.
Yeah, that's I love that you brought up this because I actually forgot about that. This was one of those where it was kind of split off as upstairs and downstairs, and you had the two different units that you could rent out and that you tested that out. People ask us that all the time. They say, if the property has the ability to do that, should we do it? And I always answer with it depends, because it depends on a lot of different things. How is the shared space divided? Is the property, does it have enough privacy for each of the parties independently versus if they were just one party together? Because a lot of the shared common space, you have a really nice outdoor space on yours that's a covered outdoor patio area. Who gets that, right? And so and when you're advertising it, sometimes on paper you're like, oh, I can make more money with two units. And I always say, typically in the peak season you're almost always better combining them, but in the off season sometimes you split them up and you're like, well, it doesn't really work well to split up. Like you said, there's confusion and the guests don't know who gets what space, and there's not privacy here, and there's this common area outside, and you know, well, what if I want to use the hot tub, or I want to have a barbecue out on the deck?
Right.
And the other, like, is that, it sounds like that's the kind of stuff you were experiencing.
Exactly. And then the upstairs is the only one that can actually use the amenities upstairs, because the deck and stuff is up there. So if you were downstairs, you'd have to walk all the ways around, and it's just confusing. So
yeah,
I just decided not to do that at all.
How long did you experiment with that for, splitting it up?
6 months or so.
Yeah.
First 6 months.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I definitely think you made the right decision. I almost, like, I would say, when I say it depends and I look at it all, I would say 80, 85% of the time, it makes the most sense to keep it all together as one bigger unit.
Right. And, unless it was actually designed that way.
Yeah. That's how it's designed. Right. Right. Exactly.
But I mean, if it's an actual duplex, then you have to keep it that way. Right. But mine is one house with two apartments.
Yeah.
So it all depends.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Most of them are one house. So when I get the question asked and they're saying, hey, listen, should I do the basement and the upstairs? I could do it separate. They have two kitchens. And so that's usually when the question comes, is when they have multiple kitchens, a kitchen up and a kitchen down. They're like, well, I could lock this door off and I could have two units. And unless it's really designed as two separate units, I typically lean toward keeping them together.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially noise.
Yeah.
When you got somebody, you know, kids jumping up and down upstairs, and you have a tenant or somebody downstairs, you know, it's going to cause problems. It's going to cause you headaches.
Yeah, so. For sure. So did we mention the market you set upstate New York? Tell us the ski town and the market itself, Ellicottville, New York, right?
Did I pronounce it right? Yeah, Ellicottville, New York.
Ellicottville. Okay, perfect. Yeah. So, and what's the ski town? Is the ski hill, is that what it's called? What's the ski hill called?
The ski hill is, oh, now you got me off, guard.
Is it old, Sugar Town? Stuff.
The Sugar Town is the road that it's on, and it's called Sugar Town Ballet. What we mean that's the property.
Yeah. So it's not Sugar Town. I was looking to see what, because you're right there by the skier, like the ski hill, right?
Yes. One's called Hollymont. It's a private ski area. Gotcha. And then the other one's called Holiday Valley, and that's the public ski area. So there's two ski areas. Right there. Nice. The property's about another two away from both of them.
So when did you start to realize, you mentioned at the very beginning of the conversation that you realized that the summertime is every bit as busy as the ski season. Yes. Did you realize that right out of the gate? Because that is something like when you underwrote this, you were thinking about more of a wintertime, you know, ski season, peak season for this property, right?
Right. Correct. Yeah. I had no idea that summer was going to be even busier. So the town is like a little itty-bitty town, really, like, you know, it's a beautiful little town. It's almost like when you go somewhere for Christmas on the East Coast.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like. So really cute. But they do hold a lot of festivals and food events and concerts, little concerts and things like that. So summertime is just as busy as wintertime.
Did you find that it evolved to that? Or did you realize, like, I know you didn't walk into it thinking it was going to be like that, but did you feel like the first couple of years it was slower in the summer and it's evolved into being busier in the summer? Did you feel like it was a surprise right from the beginning?
I think it all evolved in the same way. So summer and winter just started out slow and then slowly just started building, both of them built at the same time. But which just surprised me. I didn't think that was going to be that way. But yeah, they both evolved at the same time. The more 5-star reviews I got, the more people came, the bigger money that was made from it. And I got to start raising rates.
Yeah. Did you choose, are you managing the property yourself? Or have you been, I know you are now, but did you manage it from the very beginning?
No, I have a property manager that manages it since the beginning. And the people that I found have been awesome. I believe they charge 13%.
Are they a co-host? Because I see you on the listings. Yeah. The okay. So a co-host, right?
They take care of everything. I don't do anything.
Yeah. Perfect. I love those relationships. You keep the listing. It's in your name in case something ever happens. You don't lose any of that. But they've proven to be a very good partner for you, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. When you mentioned the summertime in the ski areas, we really noticed that the I always tell people now, a lot of the ski towns, you're busier. You almost make more money in the summertime than you do in the wintertime. The wintertime is very dependent on the snow. And it's very, like, out west, we had pretty crappy years the last 2 years. Last year was really bad. And a lot of the ski town areas in the wintertime didn't do very well. In the summertime, they're consistent, right? It's going to be hot and everybody wants to escape the heat, and they go up into the mountains to escape a little bit of the heat, and they do very, very well. And now more and more, like you said, a lot of these ski towns are doing these festivals, and they're doing these, they've got these cute little downtowns, almost all of them. There's these little, right. They're really well put together and really fun. And people are realizing that they like it's almost like they like the mountains as much as they like the beaches now in the summer times. And so it's becoming like more of a peak season than even the ski seasons are.
And then also they also have mountain biking.
Yes.
You go up on top of the lift and then you mountain bike down it. They have a round roller coaster type of thing where it hugs the ground Alpine slide. So they have all that stuff in the summer, and in the winter they make snow. So they're really not dependent on the snow being, a lot of snow, so they can make it themselves, which is pretty nice for us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. So it stays very consistent. So did you do when you, I forgot to, I kind of skipped toward we talked about a little bit of the performance. We'll talk a little bit more about it in a minute, but did you do any value add to the property? Did you do any construction to it? Like, what did you have to do when you bought the property?
So there was some footings or a deck on the second level, but the previous owner never did anything about it. So what we did was we built a deck, and I believe it cost about $100,000 to build this deck. It overlooks the mountain. It's just absolutely gorgeous. It has a built into it. It was all used. It was used with all Amish material.
Yeah.
All the furnishings, Amish built, everything on the deck was built by the Amish. Yeah. So it's kind of unique. And we use that, to draw people, saying that, the Amish built deck, Amish built furniture, even inside the house, it's Amish built furniture.
Yeah.
So it adds kind of a nice little touch to the house.
Yeah. That local flair, right?
Yes.
It's beautiful craftsmanship, woodworking. I mean, your covered deck and like just a great outdoor space, outdoor living space there. I always, all of you listening, if you haven't listened to me for very long, that we show these or put these links in the show notes so you can go check out these properties. I always say success leaves clues, but this is one of those value add builds that you put onto the property, but really has become a centerpiece of the property, in my opinion. It's one of those things that you want to lead with on the marketing side. People are probably really, really enjoying it. Gives it a really, really good flair. And like you said, and then you've got the views out there as well. But you've really built an outdoor living space that can be used really probably year round. Like you can even use that in the wintertime.
We put a see-through tarp and we had built, and it goes around the deck. So once winter comes, we put that tarp up. It keeps the snow and wind from coming in the deck, and then you can use it year round.
Oh, that's
awesome. Then we take it off during the summer.
Yeah, that's fun. That's really fun. Yeah, I encourage all you listeners to go check out the craftsmanship of the deck and the covering, the roof over it and everything. It's beautifully built. And so you put that in. Any other things you had to do to the house as far as any fixer-uppers, like anything else that you had to do to spend money to get it up to speed?
Just furnishings, things like that. It came furnished. We put in a new couch. We put in a new table that this table's crazy. It was like $7,000. It was all Amish built. Things like that. So we put in some upgraded furnishings, some new beds, things of that nature. But everything else was pretty much in there.
I don't know if I've ever asked you this, is what gave you the inspiration or the idea to do that deck? That's a big decision, but also, I mean, it really is, in my opinion, like makes this property.
Basically, I wanted a chalet.
Yeah.
I can afford a chalet. Chalets in Ellicottville are $1 million, $1.5 million, something like that. We bought this house for $450,000.
Yeah.
So I'm like, how can we make this look like a chalet? I'm like, okay, we can make this deck on the side of it. and put like a, you know, what do you call it? Whatever that is, with the chalets do.
Yeah, like, and, yeah, almost like it's like the timber frame roof over it, right?
Yeah, right. So we did that. So when you're from the front, it kind of looks like a chalet. That was the main reason I'm doing it. And then I said, well, if we're going to put a deck in, might as well make it, you know, super nice, 72-inch TV or,
yeah,
you know, bar, fire pit, the works inside of it. That's what we did. And it turned out to be nice. I think it's the main draw to the house.
Oh, for sure. It makes the house. And it's really truly a value add too. It wasn't just like it's a revenue driver for sure. It's right. A center point revenue driver. It's a great gathering space for anybody after they're done on the mountain, you know, whether they're skiing, mountain biking, hiking, whatever time of year they're, it's an amazing gathering spot. You got the hot tub out there, but you got the TVs, you can eat out there. You got everything you need out there, but also, if you ever go sell the property, that it's also money that you were spending not only to drive revenue, but also it's a value add to the property. That property is worth more now that you've done that than it was when you bought it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I love that. So let's talk to me about, you mentioned a little bit about performance where we're like, okay, we launched. It sounds like we were testing a little bit of things with separating the property for about 6 months or so, decided to combine them. And then we've kind of been growing both of the seasons as reviews have come in. So talk to me a little bit about performance and kind of the growth of that and where it's at right now.
Well, at first it was slow and as expected, right? You got no reviews. Nobody knows you're there. But as we've been, you know, progressing, I started pricing it really kind of low just to get people in.
Yeah.
Progressively moving up the price. I think right now we have like 80 something reviews, 90 something reviews. I can't remember exactly, but they're all 5-star, 2 4-star. I don't get the 4 stars. They put 4 stars. They say, this is the best place I've ever been at. And then they give me a 4-star. I'm like,
those are the most frustrating 4 stars. It's like, there's no reason they gave you a 4-star, right?
Yeah. Right. So, yeah. But anyways, but pretty much all of them 5-star. So right now, I've been watching AirDNA.
Yep.
I don't know if the viewers know what that is, but I've been watching AirDNA, and we've been moving up the ranks. Right now, we are listed number 8, I think it's number 7, of the entire area of 600 properties in revenue. And the ones that are above us are $1.5, $2 million properties. There's no way we would ever be, you know, ahead of those guys.
Yeah.
But we're close on a $450,000 property.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
That's awesome. And so, yeah, you're hitting the 1% club in that market and with not the $1.5 million property. That's exactly what we're trying to do, is saying, hey, listen, how can we outperform the market itself? Like, you're way outperforming the comparable properties, right? And ultimately that gives you a better return on that investment saying, hey, listen, you know, I didn't have to spend $1.5 million or $2 million to get this type of revenue. And you're able to spend, you know, you're into it for $600,000 because, you know, all in, instead of the half or double that, or almost triple that in many cases, to even compete where you're at. That's awesome. I love to hear that. And so as you've been climbing up the ranks, and you said, you know, it's always, I buy in an area I want to use and check it out. And I love this area and I love having a property here, but the calendar is pretty full and it's hard to go use it. You know, it's
right. That was the plan. Our plan was to go every summer, spend a couple of weeks there and leave. And I said to myself, I'm going to let it open up and I'm not going to block anything out while I'm there. I used to do that at the beginning. Yeah. Now I said, I'm just not going to block it. I'm going to see what happens. Every time we decide to go, I have to stay at a friend's house. We actually bought a little trailer to tow down there so that I can stay in case it books.
Yeah.
We don't get to stay. We're in the trailer the whole time. So, yeah.
Do you have any plans to change that? Do you ever, like, now that you know what it can do and how it can perform, does it, are there plans to kind of start blocking it off again? Or what do you, or is
no, it too soon? I'm going to keep it open.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep it open. I mean, I don't want to stop somebody from paying $1,000 a night.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy money. So, I don't do that. But I'm thinking about buying a property nearby that's not on a ski slope that, you know, doesn't cost as much so I can have somewhere to stay.
Yeah.
And use the property on the weekdays when it's not booked.
Yeah. Love it. That's, it's funny. We have a property, I've talked about this before, and I've stayed at my next door neighbor's property, I don't know how many times, down in St. George. So just north of you. And because our property is booked for double what they're charging us to stay at it. And so there's a lot of times where Teresa and the kids, my two kids, they'll go down there for different things. And I, even if I don't go with them, we'll book my next door neighbor's property because it's cheaper for me to book his property and stay in it than stay in my property that's rented for double the price.
Exactly. So, I have a best friend that lives in the area. So sometimes I'll stay at his house or stay in his driveway with my RV or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, or I could go to a motel. I've done that too.
Yeah.
It's so much cheaper. I wouldn't stay at my property.
That's kind of how we get. We were like, I love these properties, and maybe there's a time that we're just like blocking them off and we don't care. But right, like I'm in that stage where we're just, hey, listen, I'll find somewhere else to stay because I'm making enough on my property that I can, I can actually make money while I'm there by renting my property. Even after I take out the fees of what I have to pay to stay there, I'm still net positive.
Right. Another thing too, I was worried about off subject, but it's capped my night stay at $1,000 a night because I was actually $999. I was afraid to go over that $1,000 mark. And I did that for probably 2-3 years. And probably, I don't know, beginning of the year, I just said, you know what? I'm just going to try. See what happens. Bumped up to $1,250 a night. Nothing's changed. It just keeps pumping. I was like, this is crazy.
We never, you do that. And then you're like, oh man, how much money did I leave on the table? Right.
Right.
But you're still making money at the $1,000, you know, and you're like, I just don't even think I can get higher than that.
Right.
And that's why you want to test it, right? When on good properties, I always tell people you want to test that maximize phase of the pricing model at least once a year if you've got a really good property. And and only during the peak season, only test that during the peak season because that's when you're going to get the best feedback on it. But we'll raise our prices and we'll keep raising them until we hear crickets or where we don't get the bookings because you don't know what that top level is. And you almost you still don't know. You went to 1,200 and people are booking it, 1,250 people are booking it. You almost have to keep raising it until they say, that's a little too expensive for me.
Right.
You don't know if that's going to be 1,500 or 1,300 or what it's going to be.
We use Price Labs.
Yeah.
So basically I set Price Labs at maximum of 1,000 or a maximum of 1,250. And if it's Price Lab says, you know, hey, it's going to be 900, then it's going to be 900.
Yeah.
But during the winter, every day is at 1,250. So we're not at winter yet. I've had it set at 1,250. So we're going to see what's going to happen.
It'll be interesting. I would suggest putting it. I usually push it even in Price Labs, push it by 10% maximum every week. Sometimes we even do 5% every week until we see a little bit of a fall off. As soon as we see that fall off, we go back to the last spot we were at. So we'll lower it by that 5 or 10%. And then we just sit there as our baseline. And so we're really, and you're still using Price Labs to kind of go up and down, but you're kind of raising that baseline and not having that maximum. Let them set that maximum as it keeps going up.
I haven't done that yet. I haven't done an actual Price Lab 5 or 10% bump in everything. Yeah. I just did the maximum because I knew the maximum was going to be the winner.
Yeah.
I should probably try doing that too.
Yeah, you ought to. It'd be interesting. And it's this is a strategy, especially on established properties that are doing well, that kind of keep hitting that ceiling. You want to double check that and just test it again during a peak season. And I usually only do it once a year. I won't test that all the time. I'll kind of test that once a year maximum.
And another thing too is probably haven't looked at any of the schooling, that you put out. I probably haven't seen that in 3 or 4 years.
Right.
I probably should go back and look. There's probably new stuff I don't even know.
Yeah, we're learning stuff all the time. Come on, Chuck. You gotta get you back in there.
It's true, but I'm just lazy. I mean, the thing works, it's
a testament to having a good producing property. It's like, why? You're right. I'm doing well with it. I don't need to, none of us want to go back to school, right? None of us want to go back and watch a bunch of courses and everything else. But, ultimately, you know, do you have plans for another property? I know you said maybe another one next to this one. Is that going to, you'll still turn it into a short-term rental, but maybe not right on the ski hill type of thing? Or would you do, are you looking at any other markets?
There's a lake where my best friend lives. It's real close to the property. It's probably 15 miles or so.
Yeah.
Beautiful lake. I could do boating and stuff like that. But the problem, once again, is summer. I want to be there in the summer. So if I buy a lake house and, and put it as Airbnb, now I'm going to have the same problem I've had with the other one. So, I'd love to do a new property. I'm really, when I started this property, I didn't want to jump on another one right away.
Right.
I wanted to see how this does. And it's been 4 years, 5 years. I can't remember how it's been. But I think it's about time to jump on a new property somewhere.
Right. Yeah. You've got one producing really well. I mean, anytime we're talking about pushing the ceiling, that's always those are always good conversations. That means the property's doing well.
Right.
So awesome, man. Yeah. Well, as you think about the next property, as we kind of wrap up our conversation, I always like to end with, if you had to do it and you're going to maybe do it again, what are some of the things you would change, or what are some of the things you for sure double down on? Are there things that come to mind on what you would do different and what you would make sure that you kept the same and double down on?
I didn't really have any problems going through the process. It was pretty straightforward. I looked at your manual and like, okay, this paint needs to be this color white. I remember what it was. It was like eggshell white or something. Yeah. I don't remember. So I painted everything eggshell white, and I followed it step by step by step. I didn't deviate from any of it. I never had a problem.
Yeah.
So the only real problem that I had was getting people to come in at the beginning, because it was a property that wasn't established. And even that, worked itself out. Everything that I did in the manual worked.
Yeah.
So if I do another property, I'll probably read up on what I need to know again and just follow everything step by step.
Yeah, it's interesting. I appreciate you saying that too, because I mean, we call it a recipe for a reason, right? We call it the blueprint for a reason. You follow a blueprint, you follow recipes, and you hope for like a predictable outcome when you do that, right? I'm going to do this step, I'm going to do this step, I'm going to do this step, and then I expect that outcome. And it sounds like that's what you did. And we see that all the time. It's why we call it a blueprint. A lot of times when I ask this question and somebody will say, you got to trust the process. Don't try to change it, because the things that I changed didn't work the way I thought they were going to work. And I got to double down on what we know works, and what we know works is a process and a recipe. So it's fun that you brought that up. And, because that's what we find. It's like, hey, listen, don't deviate too much because this has been around for a long time. There's a lot of people that have been a part of, iterating and changing this blueprint and process and refining it over the years. But at this stage, it's like pretty dang refined. There's very few revisions you need to be making to that blueprint. And so I also say it's a paint by numbers type of a program. It's like the paint by numbers, if it says paint with, number three means paint with blue, I'm going to paint with blue. And if it's number one, just paint with white, go paint with white. Right. And it's really kind of, it can be kind of boring, because you really don't have a lot of creative, your creative juices don't really get a flow if it doesn't, you just kind of want to follow the process.
I'm boring, so I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I am too. I just give me the process, give me an outcome, and then I want it to as predictable as possible.
What I find crazy is I'll see people complaining like, my property isn't producing. Why is this? Why can't I mean, just complaining. Then they never follow the steps.
Yeah.
Especially the step where it says you need to be, your property needs to be location, 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 right?
Right.
Property needs to be at that location.
Right.
And don't deviate from that. And they buy 3, 4, 5, 7 miles out and expect the same outcome.
Yeah.
And then when they don't, and they've already bought the property, and now they're crying because it doesn't produce.
Yeah.
So you just gotta follow the steps and everything will be fine.
Yeah. That's awesome. I had another one of my meetings today on the speaking of location. They're like, man, I'm not hitting my numbers. I said, well, send them over to me. Let me look at them. Let's see what we did. And they're like, I followed the steps. I did the underwriting exactly. And something's not working. It's not, I'm not hitting the numbers. And I looked at it and the numbers, it was a beach community and all of the comps and all the numbers were written with properties on the beach and they're 20 minutes away from the beach. And I'm like, you're not going to get beach numbers 20 minutes away from the beach. 20 minutes right. is a long way from a beach. Like it's like,
right.
you know, people, your numbers start to get affected when you start to get 5 or 10 minutes away from the beach.
Right.
You know,
I want to see sand when I, yeah, if I'm going exactly. to the beach,
it's not, I want sand. So yeah, those numbers, the revenue on the beach is different than 20 minutes away from the beach. Yeah. And they're like, right. oh, it was a lot better buy. I said, yeah, no shit. It's a better buy, but it's not on the beach. So the revenue is not going to be the same as the beach. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's, but my property kind of weird in the fact that the dividing line between the two towns runs right through the middle of my property. So on the right hand side of the property in the living room is Ellicottville, New York. On the left side of the property is Gray Valley, New York. So if that property would have shifted 20 feet to the left, it would have been in Gray Valley, New York, right?
Yeah.
And I don't care what anybody says, if your property is not in Ellicottville, New York, even if it's 20 feet to the left,
yeah,
people are going to look at it differently because it's in a different town.
Yep.
So
it makes those little things make massive differences that a lot of people don't understand. And it's when you're going through that location, you know, and understanding that and really paying attention to that, it makes a massive difference. The, like I always tell people, you know, your address makes a difference. Like what it says on the city specifically makes a difference. And like you said, it you know, if it could be 20 feet different and it says a different name on the city, the right. perception of the consumer is, oh, it's a different area. And I'm not paying as much in that area as I would in Ellicottville.
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Chuck, this has been a great conversation. I appreciate you jumping on. I like to, you know, hear, like get the updates, get the, hear how things are going. It's exciting that we're talking about pushing ceilings, you know, and saying, hey, listen, let's test at the maximum side. I'm excited for you to get to property number two as well. Obviously, those of you listening, you guys know how much I enjoy these conversations. I know how much you enjoy these conversations because these are the ones we get the most comments on, likes, and the support with. And so if you have, you know, we always appreciate you spending your time listening in on these conversations. I'm so grateful for people like Chuck that are able to come on and just share the good, the bad, the ugly, let people listen in on he and my conversation on how this process has been. And if you got value out of this, our goal of Odyssey is always to help you walk into this game with your eyes wide open. That's what we try to do. It's why we have these conversations. It's why we learn from our mistakes. We share those mistakes. We talk about the successes so we can double down on the successes. If you know anybody that would like to be a part of these conversations, share the show. Those things very, very much help us. You realize that you didn't have to listen to a bunch of pauses in this conversation with ads and sponsorships and everything else because we don't run them. And the only way the show grows is organically, you guys sharing it. And so if you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. And as we wrap it up today, the final most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode is pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.